contained in document S/2024/254. Please raise their hand. Those against. Abstention. The result of the voting is as follows. 14 votes in favor, 0 vote against, 1 abstention. The draft resolution has been adopted as Resolution 2728-2024.
Howdy, everybody. We are back with another episode of the D Program. We wanted to jump right in with this one. We're considering this, I don't know, an emergency recording. We were planning on recording tomorrow, a topic which you will get soon enough. But for now, we've got some very important news that we want to discuss. There has been an agreement reached, a resolution at the UN to implement what is being called a ceasefire in the genocide of the Palestinian people at the hands of the illegal military occupation of Palestine. The clip you heard at the beginning of the episode should be very telling. The last time there was applause at a UN Security Council meeting was in 2003, over 20 years ago, when the then French foreign minister, or I guess he's still French, but then Minister of Foreign Affairs, poor guy, condemned the invasion of Iraq. So that should tell you just how serious this is being taken, at least by you know, the people who are observing there, if not by some of the criminals sitting on the council itself. I'm going to give you all a quick rundown of the events and what it means a little bit, and then Hakeem is going to jump in with some very important background information. So let's go ahead and get started. If this is going to be a shorter episode, that's just the way it's going to be. We want to give this this topic the sobriety it deserves and get the information across as efficiently as possible. So here we go. So the UN resolution that was just passed is very good news. No qualifications there. This is good for the Palestinian people. But it is really only a brief respite. This ceasefire...
bare bones.
Yeah, it's basically what the humanitarian pause the policy wonks came up with, you know, a couple months ago, whenever that was. It's basically that. It's only for the remainder of Ramadan. It's just 2 weeks. It took 6 months of the most explicit genocide in history to get a two-week pause, and we're only getting it. We're only getting it because the U.S. finally decided to abstain from this vote after vetoing it three times. And that should tell you something about the power that the U.S. wields on the council. The U.S. claims, and this is one of the most important parts here, the U.S. claims that this resolution is a non-binding one, meaning Israel doesn't actually have to stop what they're doing. Here's a clip from a White House press briefing saying as much.
A couple of points that need to be stated and, in fact, restated. Number one, it's a non-binding resolution, so there's no impact at all on Israel and Israel's ability to continue to go after Hamas. Number two, as I said in my opening statement, it does not represent a change at all in our policy. It's very consistent with everything that we've been saying we want to get done here.
Here's the thing, though. At least on paper, UN resolutions are binding, and a refusal to adhere to resolutions like this one are not only a violation of the UN Charter, but a breach of international law. And the fact that the U.S. can just straight up lie and say this one is not binding means that either the whole thing is a sham, or the U.S. has so much power among peer nations that the rules simply don't apply to them.
I like how basically like half a dozen statements were made afterwards. It's like, no, it is absolutely binding. All UN resolutions are binding.
Yeah. Well, they're just doing it for the soundbite. They were coached on that, she kind of like quickly slipped in there. This non-binding agreement we're all very in favor of. It's like, okay, yeah, we see what you're doing. We see the blood on your hands there. Anyway, I think we all knew that it was the case that the United States just wields tremendous power and can, you know, gum up the works as much as they want to. But it's still pretty incredible to see them flaunt that power so openly. I don't think that's something they necessarily would have done for a lot of other circumstances. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Security Council also made a point of falsely claiming this resolution is non-binding and then followed it up with a demand for the release of all prisoners. So at the end of the day, what we have here, what this resolution is offering, is the humanitarian pause that we were offered a couple months ago with the added stipulation that the resistance give up the remainder of their bargaining chips, though if we're being honest, the occupation forces haven't really shown much willingness to not shoot their own people, right? They've been very clear that they are perfectly happy to butcher their own people if it means blowing up a few more Palestinian children. And even if this does lead to a lasting ceasefire, which it won't, in my opinion at least, Israeli officials have already said that they're going to continue their purge. But even if it did lead to a lasting ceasefire, it's not enough. Where are the consequences for the perpetrators, right? Where are the war crime tribunals? Who's going to stand trial for using banned munitions, for blowing up hospitals or schools or places of worship? What happens to the Palestinian people who have lost their homes, their livelihood, their entire family? There have been entire bloodlines wiped out from the public record in this genocide. A permanent ceasefire is just not enough, and a two-week pause is certainly not enough. One person who's been pretty good on this issue, at least, you know, speaking, I believe Colombia has cut ties already, but Gustavo Petro, the president of Colombia, has made a couple of important statements on the recent developments, and I would like to read them both because I think it kind of sums up the mindset we need to have right now. Here's the first one. The European Union, the United Kingdom, and above all, the United States, they all support dropping bombs on people because they want to teach a lesson to the entirety of humanity. They are telling us, look at our military power. What happens to Palestine can happen to any of you if you dare to make changes without our permission. And I think that's very true. And then in response to the ceasefire resolution, he said, quote, I invite the nations of the world to ensure that if Israel breaks the ceasefire, diplomatic relations will be broken with that country. And this is what we need more of. If Israel doesn't play by the rules, they suffer material consequences. That is something that they have not gotten to this point. They've gotten, like, you know, a mild talking to, maybe. That's it. There's no material reason for them to stop what they're doing. What we need to
not
do...
Not even a slap on the wrist.
Nothing. We need to enforce no trade, no support, and the prosecution of settlers who take part in the genocide and later attempt to sneak back into whatever European country they migrated from. Actual consequences. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, this continues. It's like raising a child. If the child doesn't see that there are consequences for actions, they're going to continue doing it, and they're going to be more emboldened to make worse decisions.
Sorry to cut you off. Have you seen what the Israeli comment on Gustavo Petro's statement?
No.
Have you seen what they said?
It's
the trifecta. They called him an anti-Semite.
Uh-huh.
They called him a supporter of Hamas terrorists.
Love it.
And then they were like, we will not be pressured by anyone to stop our eternal mission. fighting against the forces of... these are the forces of light. Fighting against the forces... Basically, they went the full, you know, Tolkien route.
The forces of light versus the forces of children... darkness. Anyway, the same should apply to the United States as Biden continues to support Israel, right? But we all know that's not going to happen. It's just, we can hold Israel to account because at the end of the day, it is a small bastion of, you know, hyper-condensed U.S.-style evil in a region that is overwhelmingly antagonistic towards it, rightfully so. But the United States is still the most powerful nation on earth. There aren't going to be any consequences for the Biden regime. But one more thing that I want to bring up before I hand it over to Hakeem is the new U.S. spending bill, which Biden signed a couple of days ago at time of recording. The bill includes provisions to cut funding to the UNRWA, which is the UN aid agency that's been providing aid to starving Palestinians. And it gives Israel $3.8 billion in support. And that's
your
just
tax money.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, this is our money. Like, it's frustrating when people say, oh, we don't have health care. And they're sending, which, you know, I understand the logic there. They are, we don't have health care. It's true that money could be used for stuff here. But also, like, your objection to that should be more that U.S. money, your tax dollars are being used to butcher people, and less that it could be used for something else, right? Just one thing for well-meaning lefties to keep in mind when talking about this sort of thing. It just comes off as a little bit insensitive when you frame it like, oh, this is our money to be used for a bridge. Oh, speaking of bridges, the bridge. Anyway, just something I wanted to throw in there because I've heard it a few times now. But this aid to Israel thing, this is insane. not only has the ICJ concluded that Israel is plausibly committing a genocide, which is about as concrete a statement as we can expect to get from them on the subject, but the majority of Americans and the vast majority of the rest of the world overwhelmingly recognize the genocide for what it is. And yet we're still sending Israel, the perpetrators, billions of dollars to continue their extermination campaign.
The international community is basically Capitol Hill. That's what you need to know.
Yeah. Right?
That is the international community.
Yeah.
It's not whoever's sitting in Sierra Leone.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah. The bill cuts all funding to the UNRWA through 2025, and it includes some truly heinous language. Let me read you a snippet here. None of the funds appropriated under the heading Economic Support Fund in this act may be made available for assistance for the Palestinian Authority if after the date of the enactment of this act, the Palestinians initiate an international criminal court judicially authorized investigation or actively support such an investigation that subjects Israeli nationals to an investigation for alleged crimes against Palestinians. So what this is saying in normal people terms, if you couldn't keep up, because that's a lot of them saying investigation, is even when funding is resumed to the UNRWA, if it indeed is, if at any point the Palestinian people attempt to get justice through what by most Western liberals would be considered legal, appropriate means, which would be launching or supporting an international criminal court investigation into the genocide, if they do that, if they even vocally support such an investigation, they will lose funding. That there's no funding whatsoever. They're basically being held hostage, saying, when we offer the funding again, if you try to get justice for the people that have been purged, we will not provide funding at all. It's insane. It's just anybody who reads this would think, okay, that's just
Biko and those your funding. All right, fuck you.
It's just bad people. I don't know what else to say. It's subjects Israeli nationals to an investigation for alleged crimes against Palestinians. Alleged crimes. We have terabytes of video of them celebrating these crimes.
Reported statements and everything. Yeah, Habibi, the reason that they put this tidbit in there is because they know it's a slam dunk case.
Yeah.
They know that there is no way you can plausibly deny this stuff unless you basically use just force of arms or force, basically, to prevent the case from going forward, which the United States has also threatened, by the way. Just like they threatened to militarily intervene in the Hague if one of their soldiers is brought to trial.
Oh my God.
Again, not to be this guy, again, I'm a fucking broken record on this, but if the Soviet Union ever made this fucking claim, all right, or China today makes this fucking claim, we would not hear the end of it.
Ever.
Right? Yeah. But anyways.
And no one will ever hear about this. This is one of the, this might be the only time you hear that about this language in the bill. It's not going to be reported anywhere else. And there's a reason for that, right? It's so sad. We've talked about this a number of times. Like, if we're going to be an evil empire, at least give us the aesthetics, right? Have our people dress up in the big leather coats and the black hats.
You get deep fried butter. That's the best they can do. All right.
No.
All right. You get. We were speaking before the recording. You get pizzas with hot dogs in the buns, in the crust.
I've tried to tell Hakeem that this is not something we do.
I refuse to believe it. I've heard of nothing more American than hot dogs in the crust.
I've never seen a wiener crust. Okay.
All right.
Let me hand it off to Hakeem. That's a brief rundown of the resolution. And let our big, well-read brain over here give you the more important background information.
This is a very beautiful overview. Thank you for that, JT. I want to share a very important bit of, I guess, popular sloganeering, if that's even a word, from my part of the world, which goes as such. Allah, Allahu Akbar, Amrika, Shaitanu Akbar. It basically means God is great. America is the greatest Satan.
Even I knew that little bit of Arabic.
Or the greatest. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to give you a little rundown. Prior to the passing of this quote-unquote ceasefire resolution, which for the people listening in the future, this was on the 25th of March 2024, the Friday prior, this was Monday, right? The Friday prior, there was a vote on a draft, another draft proposal, basically, but this one was put forward by the United States. The one that passed recently was put forward by, I believe, an Algerian, like, Arab bloc in coordination with, like, 10 other countries. Sierra Leone and, I believe, Colombia was in there. China and Russia were in there. A bunch of other countries, too. Slovenia, I believe, or Slovakia, one or the other. That's aside from the point. the Friday prior, there was a vote on a draft put forward by the United States. This draft that was put forward was vetoed by Russia and China. Immediately, of course, the lamestream media, as we call it, including, by the way, official organs, the UK ambassador to the UN, for example, they claimed that the American draft proposal called for an immediate ceasefire, and the Russians refused it, and this is how evil of the Russians, blah, blah, blah. But this was an outright lie. If you read the text of the draft proposal, it says or it states that a ceasefire in Gaza is imperative, but there was no direct, they didn't directly demand a ceasefire. They just said that it should be done. And this ambiguous language was very intentional by the United States, because it would have allowed the continuation of Israel's military operation in Gaza, particularly Rafah in the south, which is why it was voted by Russia and China, as well as Algeria. I don't know if you remember, but there's a guy named Craig Mukhabir, or Mukhabir, or whatever, however Americans pronounce his name.
Mukhabir. I don't know.
Mukhabri, exactly. He's a UN official, former senior UN official, that basically dropped out of all of this because of how horrible, the things that Israel was carrying out were so horrible, and the lack of effective anything being done about it. So basically, he resigned out of protest, essentially. Mm-hmm. But he stated something that's very clear. He said, the U.S. draft resolution, which does not demand an immediate ceasefire, but instead suggests one, might be negotiated if certain terms and certain conditions are met. This is not a ceasefire resolution. It is a ransom note, which is a very accurate point, because essentially it mentions, return all the hostages, basically. Only the Israelis, Israeli nationals, return all of them. The Palestinian prisoners and hostages that Israel has taken, none of them need to be released. And also, if they're returned, then maybe we can discuss the ceasefire. It's a bullshit resolution.
Yeah.
Russian ambassador to the UN, he said that the diluted formulation, this is a direct quote, diluted formulation was deliberately misleading the international community in order to delay an actual ceasefire. And then he goes on basically saying that this is trying to throw a bone to American voters who want to see an end to the bloodshed. And of course, China's ambassador added, the most urgent action to be taken by the council is to promote an immediate, unconditional, and sustained ceasefire. How based of them. It's immediate, unconditional, and sustained ceasefire, he said. This is the universal call of the international community. Then he continues with the quote, if the U.S. was serious about a ceasefire, it wouldn't have vetoed time and again multiple council resolutions. It wouldn't have taken such a detour and played a game of words while being ambiguous and evasive on critical issues.
Yes.
God damn.
That's how you make a statement. That's exactly right. Like, you can quibble about the stuff, but to go ahead and say it outright like that, hey, you guys are being unserious. You're pretending that you haven't been the biggest roadblock to an actual ceasefire that you claim that you want. Yes, that is a good statement. Well done.
Now, let's juxtapose the base Chinese statement with a statement from Israel's ambassador to the UN, Gilad Erdan. He was the guy, him and his team, who came to the UN wearing the Yudin, golden stars on their thing. Anyways, by the way, these are the same people who call Holocaust, the people who died in the Holocaust, the people who survived it, they call them weak, and they call them, and they treat them like absolute shit, saying that, if you were actually, if you embodied what it's supposed to mean to people,
Yeah. If you were truly God's chosen people, you wouldn't have been so weak.
Yeah, social Darwinist shit. Absolute evil. So this guy, he said, after Friday's vote, that the one that failed, the American proposal, he said that the Security Council's failure to adopt the American resolution is, and I quote, a stain that will never be forgotten. Now, why would an Israeli ambassador be in favor of a quote-unquote ceasefire proposal? I fucking wonder. Oh, wow, maybe because it doesn't actually mean anything?
Yeah.
By the way, just suppose that with the reaction to the recent ceasefire that was passed on Monday, I'm going to talk about that in just a second. Anyways, this guy, being the absolute upstanding human being that he is, he went on to blame all civilian deaths on Hamas, and he claimed that the, and I quote, libelous famine in Gaza is Hamas propaganda.
Oh my God.
he went out of his way and he said he denied that Israel was impeding the movement of humanitarian aid to and within Gaza.
It's on video. They're outspoken about why they're doing it. There are reporters there hey, why are you guys doing this? Oh, we hate Arabs and we want them to die. Yeah. Okay, thanks for the interview. They're not shy about this stuff.
When we defeat Gaza, and then there will be Disney World and Sephora and Starbucks, basically. Anyways, I will want to share with you, to juxtapose with this beautiful point, juxtapose is the word of the hour, apparently, the bullshit where they say that they deny that Israel is impeding the movement of humanitarian aid. I want to share with you a comment from the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator. So this is the guy, basically. Mm-hmm. And he put up quite a long write-up, and he says, "There's been a lot of debate and finger-pointing about the challenges to getting aid to the people in need in Gaza, so let's settle this once and for all. Limits to aid distribution within Gaza are set by those who block the movements of convoys meant to feed tens of thousands of critically hungry people. They are set by those who denied the access of every fifth humanitarian mission to northern Gaza in the first half of March. They are set by those who refuse to open crossing points leading directly to the north, where hundreds of thousands of people are in imminent risk of famine. They are set by those who block the entry of life-saving supplies for hospitals and water purification. And they are set by those who continue to bombard Gaza. We need Israel to lift all impediments to aid. We need a ceasefire now." And this is a statement by Martin Griffiths, who is the humanitarian chief of the UN, as I mentioned. It's very clear. And by the way, this is this is an Israeli tactic that people need to get familiar with. It's a known Hasbara tactic where they'll continuously refuse to acknowledge or deny things that are crystal clear.
Yeah.
If it was in Israel's benefit to say that the sky is fucking green instead of blue, then you'd be fighting online with people and hearing these stupid... You'd have high-level Israeli officials going on American news channels and Fox News and shit saying that the sky is green, right? It's a point to try to get you like down in the weeds of these... arguments that get nowhere, basically, to waste your energy that can be spent in way better things, such as organizing, going to marches, tweeting and posting things and continuously talking about it, educating people about it. Ignore Hasbara trolls. Always ignore these fucking people. They're not sincere.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody who's telling you that humanitarian aid is coming into Gaza and the Israelis aren't doing anything to prevent that, these people are trying to waste your time.
Yeah.
All right. Because this shit is crystal clear. Just like the genocide case is crystal clear. Let's move on to the actual UN proposal that was recently voted on. It's very short, so I'm going to read it out to you. Mm-hmm. It's interestingly brief. And I'm going to point out the change that the Americans made. And here's the series of countries. Sorry, I got them wrong before. It was Algeria, Ecuador, Guyana, Japan, Malta, Mozambique, Republic of Korea, Sierra Leone, Slovenia, and Switzerland. This is the draft resolution. "Reiterating its demand that all parties comply with their obligations under international law, including international humanitarian law and international human rights law, and in this regard deploring all acts against civilians and civilian objects, as well as all violence and hostilities against civilians and all acts of terrorism, and recalling that the taking of hostages is prohibited under international law." I'm just going to comment here. If you notice, they're condemning quote-unquote both sides. This is a very lukewarm statement. This is a very both sides statement. The quote-unquote bits, all acts of terrorism is not intended towards Israel, although they're the only terroristic force acting currently. Yeah. Regardless, moving on. They say, "Expressing deep concern about the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, acknowledging the ongoing diplomatic efforts by Egypt, Qatar, and the United States aimed at reaching a cessation of hostilities, releasing the hostages, and increasing the provision and distribution of humanitarian aid. Number one, demands an immediate ceasefire for the month of Ramadan, respected by all parties, leading to a lasting sustainable ceasefire." This used to be permanent sustainable ceasefire, but the Americans refused to sign in on that. So the Americans suggested the change of lasting, and that's the only way that they were going to go ahead with this. So the text was changed from permanent sustainable ceasefire, to lasting sustainable ceasefire.
And by go along with, we mean abstain and not outright veto it again.
Exactly right, yeah. To continue with the quote, "And also demands the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages, as well as ensuring humanitarian access to address their medical and other humanitarian needs, and further demands that the parties comply with their obligations under international law in relation to all persons they detain." This is a cute little line because it kind of implies that the Israelis need to release also the Palestinian prisoners that they have, which, by the way, actually, I'll mention this in a point later. Let me get to their second, the second bullet. "Emphasizes the urgent need to expand the flow of humanitarian assistance and to reinforce the protection of civilians in the entire Gaza Strip, and reiterates its demand for the lifting of all barriers to the provision of humanitarian assistance at scale in line with international humanitarian law, as well as resolution blah blah blah. And the third one is, decides to remain actively seized of the matter," basically to remain involved. It's a very lukewarm statement, actually. But this got a roaring applause in the UN because this is,
something. It's something.
To call it the bare minimum is insulting to the bare minimum, but it's something. Yeah. Exactly right. Anyways, immediately after the passing of this resolution, Israel decided to kill more than 81 people, including the bombing of a house in Rafah, which killed 18 people, 9 of which were children. By the way, this was just a house with people in it. There was no... I don't need to tell you this at this point, right?
No justification.
They kill indiscriminately, as you've noticed. Just like they render homes functionally inhabitable by using tank shells to basically blow out walls, yeah. but not collapse the building. This is a known Israeli strategy going back decades, where they basically try to do cause as much damage without flattening the area, because it's easier to rebuild a flattened plot of land than to basically make a still standing building, but with everything basically blown out of it, functional again, or it takes way longer. Mm. And by the way, this is all funded. If you're following, for example, Russia-Ukraine, you'd realize that both sides are incredibly economic with their use of shells and all their other resources, because these wars are basically wars of attrition and all that kind of stuff. They're very intelligent and strategic with their use of weapons. The Israelis use indiscriminate, like, ridiculous amount of ammunitions and shells and missiles and all the rest, because the United States basically gave them carte blanche. They give them fucking everything that they asked for, including the 45,000 tank shells that the United States is going to deliver to Israel that were earmarked for Ukraine, by the way.
Which is darkly funny. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Exactly right. But yeah, anyway, moving on. So that's what Israel decided to do. And speaking after the vote, the U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Grenfell, she blamed Hamas for the delay in passing a ceasefire resolution, of course. And she said, we did not agree with everything with the resolution. This is the reason that they abstained, basically. And she says, certain key edits were ignored, including our request to add a condemnation of Hamas. These fucking ghouls would rather people continue dying rather than some lukewarm bullshit that nobody cares about. No, by the way, if you remember, in the first month or two, everybody would ask, do you condemn? Yeah. Nobody gives a shit anymore. Nobody cares.
And but there's still laws. It's right that nobody cares, too, because on the one hand, an oppressed population has the right to resist their executioners by whatever means they deem appropriate. Mm. But also, it doesn't matter if Tony in New Jersey condemns Hamas. Like, what does he have to do with this conflict? Absolutely nothing. It has no material impact on it whatsoever. It's just another way to get people wrapped around the axle.
Do the people of Gaza, over 50% of which are under the age of 18, condemn Hamas? The 8-year-olds, do they condemn Astaghfirullah. Moving on, yeah. So this absolute demon decided to say, basically, yeah, they didn't condemn Hamas, number one. And she also stressed that the release of Israeli captives would lead to an increase in humanitarian aid. So they're basically putting a little asterisk where it's like, yeah, we're going to give you food and medicine and whatnot. Most likely not, actually. But only if you basically release the captives. Yeah. But an absolutely zero requirement of the release of Palestinian prisoners, which, by the way, what Israel is known to do is, in previous prisoner swaps or prisoner releases, they will release people only to track them and then re-arrest them afterwards. Which is, by the way, also internationally illegal. This is illegal, according to...
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Not that they care. They clearly
don't. It's crazy. It's like all of this is just so on the nose. And we say this for a lot of stuff, but, like, you couldn't write this. Like, you couldn't pitch this to Netflix. They'd be like, no, this is absurd. Mm-hmm. Like, this is way too blatantly evil. Write a better bad guy.
Yeah. It's like, ugh. Yeah. Exactly right. They don't even follow their like canonical and religious law. Are you surprised? That's because these Zionists are not Jews.
Exactly.
These are the worst. Yeah, these are the worst examples of humanity. Any truly Jewish person who follows their scripture would not be doing this at all. Which is, by the way, why you're seeing an entire massive upsurge of anti-Zionist Jews, which is the most beautiful thing to see. In New York and in Brooklyn and a bunch of other places, there's several rounds of massive demonstrations by Jewish people for ceasefires and for an end to the violence. Right.
I can't even imagine the pain and frustration and anger that devout Jewish people around the world feel at this, because their religion, religious symbols, religious language has been co-opted by a fascist genocidal project and using it as
an intrinsically
shield.
Atheistic force.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to know how the vast majority of these people don't fucking believe in it. My God. Or at least the founders of it. All right, moving on from that point. Jesus Christ. It's a mockery. Yeah, exactly like you said, it's write a better bad guy.
Yeah.
But anyways, moving on. And I quote, Netanyahu's office said that the U.S. failure to veto the resolution is a clear retreat from its previous position and would hurt war efforts against Hamas, inshallah, as well as efforts to release Israeli captives held in Gaza. He went on basically threw a temper tantrum. They start tweeting, by the way, which is the most hilarious thing to see. But he threw a temper tantrum where basically there was a high-level delegation, that was to be sent to Washington. It was canceled in light of this basically quote-unquote new U.S. position. But some of the officials that were meant to be on this high-level delegation had already arrived, and these were the people who were along with Yoav Gallant's entourage. This is the Israeli defense minister. Do you want to know why Gallant is in the U.S.?
No.
He said that his trip was primarily focused on, and I quote, preserving the qualitative military edge of the state of Israel and its ability to obtain air defense systems and munitions from the United States.
Christ.
You're fighting a people without a standing army, without an air force, without like air defense systems, without tank, without, you know, yeah. right? Like there's some underground tunnels where they produce a bunch of guns. That's about all they got. And they're saying that they need to preserve their qualitative military edge. How insecure are you in the quality of your quote unquote, I mean, we already know all their top, what's it called, all their top units and guys have been massacred or rendered, what's it called?
Incapacitated.
Incapacitated for life, alhamdulillah, and may they get even worse, these demons. When that's what you, have you seen the video? Oh my God. Despite the US making no serious attempt at preventing the coming invasion of Rafah, where, need I remind you, 1.5 million displaced people live in basically essentially open air cloth tents, right? Shrapnel will cut through 10 of those yeah. without any issue. These people are in grave danger. I quote, Netanyahu promised to defy US appeals and expand Israel's military campaign to Rafah even without its allies' support. Want to know why the US supposedly opposes it, the Israeli incursion into Rafah? Of course, not because of the kindness of their own hearts. I hope people didn't assume that. I mean, quote, Anthony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, told Netanyahu on Friday that such an operation would risk, and I quote, this is Blinken talking, further isolating Israel around the world and jeopardizing its long-term security and standing.
It'll make they them don't look care bad. About,
yeah, they don't care about the dead civilians. They're just afraid Israel's going to look bad if they do this. Yeah, how? Again, right, better, bad guys.
How? I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe these people truly think they're doing good, but like, how can Blinken get up there and say something like that with like zero self-awareness? And maybe he is aware.
Dude, have you, half of these politicians that are so gung-ho about supporting Israel, these people are bankrolled entirely by a particular lobby that supports it.
Yeah.
That's not, there's no anti-Semitic conspiracy of, oh, the Jews control the United States. No, it's not that. It's a very simple follow the money.
Yeah.
There are many different kind of lobbies in the United States. There are agriculture lobbies. There are pharmaceutical lobbies. There are different other countries that have lobbies, but Israel and that particular lobby has a significant presence concerning the size of the country and the relative, like, you know, right, like Pakistan doesn't have a fucking you know
imagine if China had a lobby and trying to influence their politics, what people would be in an uproar, right? Even the mainstream news, I think it was MSNBC, did a piece on AIPAC funding recently. They did like 6.5 minutes on how many millions of dollars they're spending, which was very surprising to see, but good. It's very good.
The tides are slowly shifting, but not nearly fast enough. Anyways, but moving on. Let's contrast this with the response of Hamas to what the Israelis threw a fit. They're like, oh, we need to get the military edge. We're gonna, they start bombing homes after this, all this. What Hamas said was, to give a general overview, they welcomed the Security Council resolution, stressed the necessity of reaching a permanent ceasefire, which entails total Israeli withdrawal from Gaza and the return of displaced Palestinians to their homes. And they also said that they reaffirmed their readiness to engage in an immediate prisoner exchange process that leads to the release of prisoners on both sides, which, by the way, Israel continues to refuse. They're basically saying, we're going to keep bombing you until you give, the Israelis are saying, we're going to keep bombing you until you return our hostages, which we'll probably bomb as well, Lamal. But they're giving nothing back. They're not going to return anybody, despite the fact that there are magnitudes, thousands more Palestinians in prison. And the difference is that the Palestinians in prison are literally people taken off the fucking street as young as like 3 and 4 and 5 years old, which, by the way, Israel is the only country which tries fucking 4 year olds in military tribunals with like a 98% conviction rate. This is it's a joke. Again, it's a fucking...
And tortured too. Like, we haven't even touched on the conditions in which the Palestinians held in Israeli prisons are subjected to. It's insane. Whereas we've seen the prisoners that the Palestinians have released in good spirits. They've been taken care of, despite basically how little food and medicine the Palestinians have access to. They make sure that their prisoners are taken care of, right? Yeah.
Meanwhile, the inverse, Palestinian prisoners were stripped and beaten and sexually assaulted, particularly women, amongst all the rest of it. And then afterwards, they're beaten and they're humiliated. And then before they're quote-unquote released or given any sort of contact with the outside world, they're made to basically sign and go on tape saying that, oh no, we were treated humanely and they didn't do anything to us. And then they just basically kick them out. I remember, there was an interview with a Palestinian woman who was recently released. And she, she didn't do anything. She's just some middle-aged lady. And she was beaten and sexually abused and all this kind of stuff. And in the end, basically, she was made to go on recording to say that we were treated humanely and all that kind of stuff. When the recording stopped, they started beating her again. Like, you lack words to describe this kind of evil and this kind of disdain for human life. Yeah. You have to be a certain kind of a ghoul or demon or Zionist to do this. Anyways, to kind of reemphasize something that GT said earlier, it took more than 90% of Gaza's 2.3 million residents being displaced, an unending series of Israeli siege and bombardment, which caused catastrophic famine levels, more than 32,000 Palestinians killed, most of them children, and tens of thousands more injured, over 70,000 people injured, for the U.S. to allow the passing of a single ceasefire proposal. The U.S. really is evil incarnate in this kind of stuff. And by the way, don't let this bit be overlooked. Every single time the United States wants to sow its fucking misery around the world, they always find some token minority to put to be their, you know, the altar boy to fucking.
Yeah, and I've seen, thankfully, people are roasting this take, but I've seen a couple people being like, it makes me very uncomfortable to see how the left is treating this black woman. I'm like, oh, no, you cannot do that. When you become an agent of empire to this extent, when you are willing to be the face of this, when you are willing to be the one who has all that power in raising your hand, you forfeit the right to be an oppressed minority, right? Whoever was filling that role, that's a choice they made.
I'm going to quote you. I think people know that I really like to listen to Bamboo. There's a poster in the background always of the D program animation of Bamboo, because I love him. And he had a song called Diddy Bop. The lyrics go, when y'all are focused on Asian rap representation, I'm yelling brown lives, black lives, liberation. Because how's it going to help if they look like you, representing you, but they move like colonizers do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a very beautiful, this is exactly all you need to just quote this to them, right? It doesn't matter if they got black skin or whatever else. This does not matter. If they move like colonizers, this stuff should be self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you fall into the liberal trap of, oh, like more women concentration camp guards, right? The clap emoji.
Which they unironically believe.
Yeah.
So proud of it for like the CIA director position, we need more women bombers. Like, oh my God.
Mm. Moving on to this, the new ceasefire that was passed, I read you the text of it, of course. There's some comments that were made. The Russian ambassador mentioned, and I quote, "It is of fundamental importance that the UN Security Council, for the first time, is demanding the parties observe an immediate ceasefire, even if it is limited to the month of Ramadan. Unfortunately, what happened after that ends remains unclear." And they go on to mention that Russia and a bunch of other countries tried to push for the use of the word permanent in regards to the ceasefire. And they all complained that dropping the word would allow Israel to, and I quote, "resume its military operations in the Gaza Strip at any moment after Ramadan." And to continue the quote, they say, "we're disappointed that it did not make it through." Of course, they tried, and the United States was simply not going to go ahead with it. So this is, again, like better than nothing, but again, like we're very close to nothing.
Yeah.
The pressure that is against Israel and the United States and all these politicians, wherever they are, the pressure must absolutely remain. You can't ever let go. This is not a release valve for this. Whatever the Biden regime, of course, or any other polity that currently exists that's currently supporting this or not saying in completely clear terms, immediate ceasefire, these people need to be. I don't know if you've seen, what was his name, the Canadian, Trudeau, where he was at a Greek National Day parade or something, and he was basically lambasted. People were bullying him, and very rightfully so, basically saying, how could you live with yourself, that you're not supporting a ceasefire, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. All of these people need to be like this.
Yeah.
Every time they go out in public, they need to be reminded of the sheer horror that they contribute to by not,
not a moment's peace for any of these people, not a moment's peace.
"Until a final and permanent ceasefire is achieved, where all Palestinians are allowed to return to their homes and for all Israeli military presence to leave Gaza, this is the bare minimum."
Yeah.
Now I'll read you a very nice little tidbit from a Jazeera article about titled, "Will the UN Ceasefire Resolution Stop Israel's War on Gaza?" And basically they mentioned that the United Nations Security Council resolutions, these are binding and mandatory. And if they're not followed, then the council can basically follow up the resolution with a new vote, basically mentioning that there's a breach that has happened, and then they can take punitive action. So they can punish the nation in question with sanctions or even international force, basically an international military force that will intervene. They have this power, but there's basically no chance. They say, and I quote, "there's virtually no circumstances under which the Biden administration would support a punitive resolution that takes action against Israel. Israel has repeatedly gotten away with flouting UN resolutions in the past." And then they mentioned examples from as far back as Obama's presidential term, which, for example, include the Israeli settlements, the illegal settlements in the West Bank, which the UN just basically voted. Entirely, the U.S. abstained again, but the U.N. voted by vast majority, aside from the U.S. abstaining, where they mentioned that this is illegal and that they should stop, and Israel has ignored this resolution and, in fact, continues to build more illegal settlements. Likewise with, by the way, the International Court of Justice, even if they pass a genocide claim, and even if there's anything binding that comes of it, the United States will go always on the fucking side of their little pet in the project. They want to project power, have a bastion of capital and military presence, a quick deployment base for future military interventions to secure their interests, all the kind of stuff. To I guess, summarize and to complete the presentation we have today, Ilan Pape, the Israeli historian, went on the Electronic Intifada broadcast recently, I believe just a few days ago. It was a long but lovely one-hour discussion where he basically talks about how this is Zionism's final gasp of sorts. And he describes that this is the period where we have to be most careful because this is like, you know, the dying animal is going to kick the most, yep. Right? In this point, Israel has officially turned into a pariah state. Israel will remain a pariah state. This is the darkness before the dawn. Their crimes will not be forgotten. Diplomatic relations will not just be reinstated. Their investments internationally, which by the way is the largest part of Israel's economic output, will disappear and evaporate overnight. Nobody wants to be in this region anymore because they see how volatile it is. For 20 years from now, people will be talking about what if another October 7th, 7th happens, yeah. Which will basically encourage people to not carry out investments in this illegal colonial entity. We are so close to the, you know, that 1960s arms embargo moment against apartheid South Africa. Zionism itself, it's a failed system from a time long since dead. All right, this is something that this shit used to happen in the 1800s and before. This does not happen anymore, especially when you can get when somebody dies and you can know 2 minutes later on your phone.
Yeah,
right. You can see direct footage of shit that happened this morning. Right, it's no longer word of mouth, or you have to wait for a book to be published in academic circles and for it to trickle down. You can see the shit before even mainstream media has a chance to spin it and lie to you about it. That's why the United States is begging for Israel to behave. It's only to keep them in existence. They see this light. For us, it's a light at the tunnel, but for the United States and their interests, it is not. It's one of their largest nightmares, and hopefully that it comes to pass. But regardless, to finish off in a more positive note, I guess, the UNRWA, which is, as JT mentioned, is the responsible, it's the largest deliverer of humanitarian aid to Gaza and Palestinian territories in general. They've been basically cut off of funding from every source, aside from regular people at this point and a few like token nations. But they say that they have funds to run operations until the end of May, which is better than it used to be. Before, it used to be like a week in and week out kind of thing. Yeah. But now they have a little bit to kind of cover themselves, which is better than before, but it's not good enough. So please, everybody, donate to their relief efforts. You can go just type in UNRWA on Google, it'll come up. Help support them monetarily. If you can, please keep showing up at protests. Keep posting and retweeting stuff online. You might not think it helps, but this is why the US and Israel pull all their strings and spend billions trying to prevent you seeing this stuff and trying to prevent the spread of this stuff. There's a reason Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff, they go out of their way trying to ban pro-Palestine accounts and try to shadow ban things, try to make posts, to hide posts, all that kind of stuff. This is them pulling their strings. Make them spend into oblivion. They're going to continue failing. As long as you keep posting about it, retweeting about it, talking about it, educating those around you about it, showing up to protests, of course, continuing your boycotting, make sure to not purchase anything. Even you can look up the BDS website specifically for the three levels of boycotting if you're interested. Mm. But at the very least, basically, if you turn a package around and he says made in Israel or anything of the sort, do not purchase it, do not buy it, don't do anything with it, put it back on the shelf, and maybe even lodge a complaint with the store that's serving and be like, why are you serving apartheid goods here?
Yeah,
this is the only way. As fucked up as it is in capitalism, you vote with your money, and this is one of the biggest things.
Yeah. And the storekeepers don't want that. The storekeepers don't want that. Exactly. If they get five pissed off people, the general manager doesn't want to deal with that. He'll find some other dates to stock.
Yeah, exactly right. And better days too. Yeah. But much more importantly, of course, the Moody credit score was downgraded. Let's keep downgrading it, right? We're standing at a monumental paradigm shift when Israel becomes known for the monster that it is. Mm. And inshallah, if it happens in a year or 10 or 50 or even 100, it doesn't matter. It's going to happen. Palestine will be free, and that we will live to experience, inshallah, a unified Palestinian state with equal rights for all, whether you're Jewish or Druze or whatever else, Muslim, Christian, Arab, it doesn't matter, with equal rights before the law, with equal voting rights, not an ethno-state, but an actually democratic and mutually cooperative nation that can support each and every single diverse part of it towards a bright future in arguably the most beautiful and noble land to exist on this planet.